Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Fraud and identity theft complaints tracked by the Federal Trade Commission topped 1.2 million last year. That's eight times as many complaints as there were back in the year 2000. And the kinds of complaints were wide-ranging, from debt collection scams to ethically questionable sweepstakes to internet services, imposter scams, credit protection and repair, and more. The fraud business would seem to be booming. So today on Focus, we thought we'd discuss some of the more popular and more sophisticated scams that are out there and what you can do to protect yourself from them. Our guest is Jeff Bliskell. He's the senior editor of Consumer Reports magazine, which profiled a number of these scams in a recent issue. Jeff, welcome to Focus.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Glad to have you with us. And as we begin our conversation, we welcome your examples of scams that either someone has tried to perpetrate on you or a friend or a loved one and how you dealt with it. We also welcome any other questions or comments you may have about popular scams of recent years at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also reach out to us on Facebook, and we're at Will Radio TV Online, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. The phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Jeff, what are characteristics that most modern scams tend to have in common?
Well, I would say, you know, like a good novel, a scam is all about the story. So it has to be convincing, a convincing storyline. It has to be new, right? Because a lot of people have heard scams. A lot of us are already skeptical. And so you need to hear, you don't want to come up with a scam that basically everybody's heard about and everybody can figure it out right off the top. So coming out with new stuff is an important element of it, which is why we're able to write a story about it, because there's always something new coming up here, always new tricks. Those are the key elements. And of course you have to, fraud is a business as well. So it takes time, and there are expenses related to it, as some researchers have found, so that basically you want to find the most gullible people, the ones who are going to pay off, basically, the ones who are going to buy from you, buy your scam and give you the money. So, you know, that Nigerian letter scam, you know, that's been popular in recent years, you get an email from somebody saying, you know, I'm in Nigeria and I'm trying to escape from the country and I need to transfer my millions of dollars out of the country to a bank account in America where it will be safe. And I'm happy if I can just get your account. I'll put the money in your account and we'll share the money. So you would think, who in the world would believe that? And of course, most people would never fall for that, right? It's too ridiculous. But what happens is that a small percentage of people will fall for that, and those are the people who are the most gullible, and those are the ones who now the fraudster will spend more time with to develop that scheme and develop that person to give up their money.
Let's talk about some of the more popular examples of fraud, particularly some that your magazine Consumer Reports looked into this fall. One of them that was sort of on your list of something to keep an eye out for are computer virus removal services.
Right.
You know, you might get a phone call from somebody saying, "Oh, I'm from Microsoft. We've identified some sort of virus on your computer, some malware or something, and we need to remove it. We just need a little bit of information from you to make it happen," or something like that.
Right, and it's a great one because it appeals to a number of things that are going on in society right now. Right, there's new technology all the time, and we're all somewhere, or many people are intimidated by it, or not sure, you know, worried about it. There is in the background these threats of viruses on your computer and stuff, so you know we're worried about that. And also there is, you know, the technology. Marketing companies, advertisers, everywhere you look, or at least where we look, somebody is prying into your life to sell you something, whether it's a credit card or a bank or, you know, banking discounts, whatever. So all of a sudden you get a phone call from somebody, as you mentioned, from either Dell or claiming to be from Dell or Microsoft, and they're warning you their systems have detected. So it's plausible that somebody's out there watching your computer and has picked this up. And the scam is basically we need to, you know, remotely, you know, check for the virus. And so they do that. You give them access to your virus. And if you've ever worked with the IT department in your where you work, you know that other people from far away can control your computer and fix it. So that's what happens here. But what they do is they don't fix it. They find, quote unquote, a you know, a virus or other malware that's not really on there, and then of course they charge you to remove it. And in the meantime, they can also install software that scans your computer to steal your passwords or hijacks the computer to generate ads and spread spam and such. So you end up basically you don't really have a virus. They create the impression that you do, and then they go and they actually install maybe not necessarily a virus, but phony antivirus software that, that keeps finding viruses that you pay them to remove.
And so there's that. There are also things like phishing and malware and so these other terms. They're sort of large umbrella terms for that same basic concept, though, I imagine. In some way, someone getting access to your system or you end up downloading some sort of software that's not really doing what you think it's designed to do, but it's designed to find information about you.
Right. And phishing is a term for emails, basically, that come to you, and they're phishing, I don't know why it's P-H. They spell it P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, but it's kind of like phishing, where they're phishing for a mark for somebody to take advantage of. Basically, that's an email that you get or a text message that requests information. It appears to be from your bank or it appears to be from some place that you maybe do business with. And they want information. They want your account number. They want your password. You need to put in your Social Security number, whatever. And, of course, those are scams designed to collect that information so that they can either get into your accounts or, you know, if it, let's say it's for a bank's phishing scam. So they pretend to be from your bank that you really do business with. And, you know, and then they want to get into your bank accounts and use your electronic banking to take money from you.
And these, they're getting increasingly sophisticated to the point where it gets harder and harder to tell when, for example, an email or some sort of correspondence, whether it's actually coming from your bank or coming from somebody trying to pretend to be your bank. It looks closer and closer each year.
Yeah, they're getting very sophisticated. They look very realistic. They're nicely designed, similar to the design of your bank. And sometimes they can use what's called spoofing technology, which makes it seem that, you know, that, well, that would be for phones, but a phone call. But they make it seems that the phone call is coming from Washington, D.C., for example, when it's not. It's coming from somewhere in the Ukraine or someplace. So there's lots of technology that can be used now to trick people, you know, make it look realistic.
And I guess maybe the first tip to take away from those couple of examples that we've already cited is, if they call you first, or they email you first, or it's an ad, a pop-up ad, a window that pops up on your computer, something like that, don't respond to that. You know, if you think it's from your bank, go through your normal channels to reach your bank to find out whether something's legitimate, that kind of thing.
It's like being a reporter. Basically, when someone comes to me or you, probably, you know, with a tip, you don't just take it and run, you know, and publish it, right? You know, based on what that person says, you have to go check it out. So you want to, and you want to independently check it out. So that's what we would recommend. So if you get a phishing an email from your bank, first of all, banks tend not to, they've stopped doing this, putting links in there and stuff that, you know, they now just alert you and they say, go to your account through your whatever method, you know, your mobile banking or online banking and, you know, check for this alert or message or whatever. So if there's a link in there or a phone number to call, don't use that one. Go find another one. So I got a piece of mail, actually, an old-fashioned mail in the mailbox. It was telling me that I've won some contest to win a cruise, basically. And and it was from, it looked just like a legitimate cruise lines that I've seen ads for and such. But I went online separately to find cruise line, and the numbers didn't match up. The 800 number to call from the website was not the same, you know, the legitimate one was not the same as the one in this ad. So I did call up, just as part of my reporting, as for just checking this one out, the press office at that company, and it turns out it is a scam that they've been getting. So people are calling this number, supposedly getting supposedly for a big discount on a cruise, and it's a fraud.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest is Consumer Reports senior editor Jeff Bliskell. We're discussing the wide range of scams that are popular these days, from forms of identity theft to credit card traps to fake sweepstakes to other ways that scammers seek to extricate you from your money. It's a subject Consumer Reports examined in depth earlier this fall, and it's something that seems to be more and more prevalent in our culture today. We welcome any examples you might like to share of how someone perhaps sought to scam you, or maybe a friend or a loved one who was scammed, or what you do to protect yourself from identity theft and other forms of fraud. You can call us with those examples or other questions or comments that you may have at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL. 800-222-WILL, or as always, you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we'll start this morning with Jeff. He's on a cell phone. Jeff, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Merry Christmas. You know, that this time of year, it really gets rampant. The computers that I use all the time, I'm always getting goofy stuff on there. But you just brought up something you were talking about. I keep getting calls for solicitation from police departments and certain funds. Well, I have done some research, and most of those are not legit. Because my local, where I'm out, I got both city and county police departments, and they usually inform people what they're going to do in the newspaper or some other form. And so a lot of these companies, or a lot of these guys that are calling, they're from another town or something, which I never say anything over the phone or give anybody anything over the phone. Now, the other thing is, too, as far as computers, I'm getting a lot of scam email stuff. It's that time of year, so they, jam it full of stuff. And then the same thing with mail, especially, and you're going to laugh at this one, the Reader's Digest one. The last couple of ones they've sent my house, it makes it sound like I really did win something, and it keeps getting repeat notices, and you have to open the thing up and go through it and find out it's not what it is, but it's getting realistic.
That reminds me of, for a while there I was receiving phone calls in another location saying this is your final notice, we really need you to get in touch with it, and there's sort of like an endless sense of urgency about you need to call back this number to receive your prize for whatever, and I just delete the message. But yeah, but
right.
those do come up a lot.
And let me just comment on that. It's just what you point out, a couple of tactics that get used. Basically, you must respond now, this is important, and it's urgent that you get back to us. Again, they're trying, it's like a high-pressure salesman trying to get you to call back, get your attention. One thing people worry about, well, my credit score, this will hurt my credit score, or this will do that, or whatever, So they prey on those things. Same with the good things about all of us. So one of the biggest scams in recent years, or a big scam related to charity scams, involved supposedly helping, war veterans and from Afghanistan and Iraq and all. And, of course, who doesn't want to help war veterans? They've fought for the country, for our country and everything. It was a ripoff. And it was, so they prey on the goodness in us, and they prey on the vulnerabilities. They look for those vulnerabilities, and they try to press your hot buttons.
And the caller referenced receiving calls from, you know, an organization that's raising funds for maybe, you know, a particular law enforcement agency or fraternal order of police or something like that. And some of those are legitimate and some of them maybe not. When I've received those calls in the past, my immediate reaction is always, I always say to them, I don't give out any information or money over the phone. You're welcome to mail me some materials and I'll take a look at it and consider then. And if you are this legitimate organization you claim to be, then you would understand that. And that seems to cover it.
You can always take, and again, and it's another theme that we're talking about. When somebody comes to you, just because somebody called you, why should you give them anything?
Right.
Basically, and you should always be suspicious whenever somebody calls to either sell you something or especially give you something or want to help you in some way or need you in some way. You know, always be suspicious if they called you.
Let's take some more calls. We have Steve on the line from Urbana. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I wanted to ask you about scams that people really don't have an opportunity to deny participating in, the sort of forced scams, and that is retirement programs. Lots of workers, either public workers or corporate workers, are mandated to participate in retirement systems. And yet, those retirement systems, even though they may be indicated by law, need to comply, when they get into hard times, they and when they fail to the corporation or the state of Illinois, for example, for teachers' retirements, university retirements. When they don't comply, and they haven't for many, many years, for example, with the University of Illinois and State Teachers Retirement, those people are left holding the bag. It seems like an outright scam from the beginning that we really don't have any opportunity not to participate in.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's an interesting point, and we appreciate the comment. Jeff, any reaction to the idea that maybe there are some things built into various systems that sort of that lead us into that world where, well, we want to have complete control over every last cent of income we receive, and yet there are some things we have to, you know, deal with. I don't know if we would characterize a retirement program, for example, as the same thing as what we're talking about.
I mean, the caller is actually on a good track there, I think, because retirement, you know, we have a lot of retirement, a lot of pension plans around the country have written about this as well, where they weren't properly funded. So the
right.
Companies made promises, or, you know, governments have made promises, and can't keep them because they haven't done their part. So the lesson that I would say for that is it's a kind of a scam, organized, if you will, maybe unintentional, I don't know. But the lesson there is that that's part of democracy and part of our responsibility in a democracy, where we've got to keep an eye on the people who, you know, our elected officials, number one, and number two, anyone who wants to make our life easier. So a pension is designed to make your life easier. We'll take care of you in your old age. You don't have to worry about it. But you really do have to worry about it, and people need to pay attention. So it takes a lot. Democracy takes a lot of work, and so you need to keep on top of people who make promises to you. And with a pension, for example, These are things that are, you know, this is similar to a scam, because it's a long term commitment that I make in 1965, or somebody makes to me in 1965, and I'm not going to collect until 1995 or 2015. So it's a long time, and people's memories shrink. People forget things, basically. So. So you got to pay attention. There's no free lunch, first of all, and there's no, life is a lot of work. There's, you know, conveniences can be costly.
So the healthy skepticism that we have surrounding scams, the accountability that we require of others can apply in all sorts of scenarios.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Let's go next to Ed in Urbana. Hi, Ed.
Hi. Good morning. I have had the instance on my computer of having my screen shut down and a white screen pop up, and then a screen from the FBI shutting my desktop off and saying that my computer, my entire computer, is on lockdown, and that within 72 hours, if I don't go and get this prepaid card from some, you know, local Walgreens or Walmart or whatever, put $200 on it, and then bring it back and enter the numbers in, that you know, I'll be subject to arrest and shootings and whatever, you know.
Wow.
Horrible things will happen to me. And
so that's a pretty high-pressure scam, a high-pressure push.
Well, it gives you 72 hours to do this, so which is really not very brilliant, because then in 72 hours, I'm out talking to people. You know, I got my heart rate going a little bit, my blood pressure up a little bit the first time I saw it, and I have seen it twice now.
What happens when you don't put that money on? I mean, assume you didn't put money on that card.
No, God, no. No, well, what I did was is I went to my my spouse's desktop, and hers opened, and I thought, well, it said total computer lockdown, so I couldn't quite understand why it would be full computer on one web, you know, one desktop, and then the other desktop pops up. I'm like, well, that's interesting. So anyway, I talked to people about it, and I so far have not had to wait 72 hours to get it off my computer. I just go to her desktop, and she's the administrator anyway, and I then run a scan and a debug and it removes it. I go back, and it's fine. So,
do you have security software on your computer?
I do, but then I had to move. Now, oddly enough, I had to move over to a different company. I had McAfee as my primary
security software.
Security software. And then when I first got this thing, I went on and researched a little bit on my wife's, and I found that it said that when you get these pop-ups, you have to look up this company called AVG. Now, that's what I guess I wanted to really bring up.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking earlier about how some companies can...
I will need you to get around to the question pretty quickly here.
Well,
we've got other calls.
Could it be that they put this on my computer and then expect me to try to find out about it, look up AVG, and could AVG have something to do with this, or is this just more likely?
Yeah, I don't know if that is the case. You're basically saying, could this be a clever marketing ploy? And there's lots of clever marketing out there, which is another, I think, background thing to keep in mind in all of this. But I would be skeptical about that. But as it turns out, we've rated security software Consumer Reports, and McAfee was rated number 13. McAfee Internet Security 2012 got an overall rating of 48, actually, whereas the top-rated one got a 66. And so one of the top-rated companies or software security suites is Avira. And I see AVG is on the list, about number 7 there. But I can't believe that a company, a legitimate company, would kind of scare people like that.
No, I could imagine how, I don't know about the case of this caller, but yeah, I could see a circumstance where you think you're downloading antivirus software or something associated with your antivirus software, and in fact, it's not. It's fake. And it's, again, what we were talking about before, like malware or something that suddenly creates this environment on your computer.
Yeah,
that seems the most likely thing. Let's go next to Mike in Urbana. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
What's your question or comment?
My question is, when you believe it is a scam, where can you go to turn it in to have it investigated? My particular example is Urbana has recently gone to aggregate electrical service for the entire community, and I received a call 2 days ago that was, oh, you just received a discount. Please give us all your account information and such.
Hmm.
I called the local Urbana police to say, is this a scam or not? They said there's nothing they can do about it. So how do you get the message to the local community that there's a scam targeting your specific area?
It's a great question.
Yeah, I guess it varies by the circumstances. But, for example, in that case, I would go to the utility separately, in other words, separately find out how you contact them by phone or by internet and let them know about it, because they're obviously, it's their ox being gored, if you will. They're being used. So that's one way. You can report scams and frauds to the FTC, Federal Trade Commission. They have a reporting system if you go onto their website, and they keep track of them, so at least they keep track. They don't always investigate. I mean, I don't think they can investigate with the volume of stuff that comes in, but some of those, if they see a pattern, they look at that information for patterns, and that may lead to a prosecution or an action against the company. And of course, your police, and if it's more of a, let's say it's an investment-related scam, then you might report that to the Securities and Exchange Commission or your Attorney General. Frauds, Attorney General is another good place to report your state Attorney General, because, they do investigate these things, or they at least track them, and when they see patterns, they can't investigate every single thing, but when they see patterns, they do take action. So that's how they find out about them.
Thank you for the information.
All right, thanks for the call.
Go enter some information there.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we are talking with Consumer Reports senior editor Jeff Bliskall and discussing the wide range of scams that are popular these days, from forms of identity theft to credit card traps to fake sweepstakes to other ways that scammers seek to extricate you from your money. It's a subject Consumer Reports examined earlier this fall, and it's something that seems to be more and more prevalent in our culture today. To join our conversation, you can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or you can email your question or comment to will-talk@illinois.edu. And we'll have more after a short break. This is Focus.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear revelations from well-known actors, like Zach Galifianakis on the story behind his last name.
It's actually shortened, Terry. My real last name is Galifianakisberg. that's an exclusive for your show.
Fresh Air, bringing you some of the biggest names in American culture and some of the most difficult to pronounce. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
WILL programs are made possible by Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal in Champaign. Eastern Rug Gallery offers professional cleaning and repair service for Oriental and other handmade rugs, and provides repair and restoration services for fringe and sides, holes, rips, and animal stains.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. We're joined by Consumer Reports senior editor Jeff Bliskall. We're discussing popular scams and how to protect yourself from them. It's a subject Consumer Reports examined in a recent issue. We welcome you to our conversation at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Maybe you have some examples that you'd like to share of someone seeking to scam you or a friend or a loved one, as well as any other questions or comments you may have. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Those phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. And let's go next to Tony in Champaign. Hi, Tony.
Yeah, my wife had her credit rating stolen. Somehow somebody got a hold of her date of birth, Social Security address, and phone number, and which they call personal identification information. And they set up a they used it to pose as the owner of a small local sole proprietorship, a real sole proprietorship, and they out of state, apparently, did a deal with one of those credit card processing service companies, that enables sole proprietorships to accept credit card payments. And they posed as the owner of a company in now another state, Illinois, actually locally here. And I think they were in Ohio when they did this, but it's a lot of this is kind of murky. And they posed as the owner of the company and needed to process credit card company receipts. And they opened up a somehow opened up a bank account using her information. And then they ran some stolen credit card numbers through their processing service, deposited the receipts in a bank account, which they then cleared out, and then they disappeared. And the only reason we found out about it is because months later she was mailed a collection notice for the credit card processing services fees. And when that came through, apparently the company that does the credit card processing was half aware that this was probably a scam, and so it wasn't so hard to convince them that you know, it wasn't us.
Right.
And they we had to file a police report and notify the credit bureaus, but the big thing with me was we didn't understand how anybody could get that information. Though at around that time we were looking for to refinance our home, so I'm thinking that one of our applications must have been sold or something.
Yeah, that's that. You're talking about identity theft, basically, and that's actually true. Identity theft, whereby somebody gets your social security number and they basically make believe or pretend they're you, and they do all kinds of things, like, you know, getting credit and even committing crimes. Obviously, it appears. And so they can get your. It's almost impossible to figure out where they might have gotten your information, because it's so, your information is almost everywhere, or might be almost everywhere, right? You fill out an application for a loan. You go to the doctor's office. They want your social security number. So it can be stolen, or someone could steal a data tape from a company that has, you know, thousands of names and numbers on it. So so when that happens, first of all, you would tend not to be liable for, you know, the people who have been robbed, you know, the credit card companies or the banks have to prove that it was you or your wife, and that'll probably be, I mean, I'm sure that's difficult, right, to do, because it's not her. And but there is a lot of, a lot of work to sort that out, to figure out. It's a it's like, what's this? You know, all this new information keeps coming to you, and it's very confusing. But, yeah, definitely you've had to file a police report. You should also put a credit freeze on your credit reports and work with a credit freeze basically closes your credit report, the access to it by prospective lenders, so that if the bad guy is out there still trying to get loans, he can't get access to your credit report. So have you worked with the credit bureaus on this to straighten it out? And is it straightened out, or is it still a problem?
Yeah, it apparently is straightened out. But the big question that keeps hanging over the whole thing is, how is it a bank would open up an account out of state without, you know, a lot of identification? You know, they might have all her personal identification information, like date of birth, social security number, address, and phone number, but they don't have a picture ID. They don't have, you know, you would think that the banks would have stopped all this before it got too far,
well,
but apparently they didn't.
The answer is that it's one reason why she's not liable for this is because banks and the lending business is very interested in making loans and you know, they're doing business. That's how they make money, by lending money and collecting commissions and collecting fees and stuff. So they want to make loans, or, you know, open up accounts for people, and sometimes they make mistakes, you know, because they're opening up thousands and millions of them all the time. So that's what happens, basically. It's certainly possible, and some of these systems are automated. Some of these processes are automated so that you know, if the name and the number and the Social Security match, then, you know, it's approved. And, you know, and they check your regular credit report. Is her credit report, have you looked at her credit report and cleared out the stuff that doesn't belong there? Or?
Well, yeah, and that wasn't too easy to do because you, I forget what the details were, but it's even just to take out, it turned out that only one of the credit bureaus had made a notification of the contact that this credit card processing company made to check out my wife's credit rating, and you know it's very high, so apparently they ran with it. But the only one of them did, and to get them to understand that she had nothing to do with that. Was a little difficult because they want, you know, a lot of information. I think something they wanted a copy of her driver's license. They wanted a signed affidavit, you know, a bunch of stuff. Yeah. And I had to fax it all to them, but apparently everything's okay now.
They need to be more careful now than they were with the bad guy.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing that with us. We appreciate it. And good luck. We have an email from someone who wanted to know, and wasn't sure if this is the sort of thing you could address, but noted that a few people in this person's family are suspicious of a company that one of their extended family claims to work for. And this individual says, when you try to search for information about the company on the web, either your computer hangs up or you're directed to a generic website that doesn't have contact information. Is there any way to find out what this company is and if it's legitimate? I guess there are some red flags there, potentially.
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to do that. If you know what state the company is based in, you can go to the Department of State of the state, and that's the one that basically handles corporations and deals with corporations and limited liability companies, and check if the company is registered with them, if it claims to be a corporation. So that's one way to do that. You can check it out on Better Business Bureau, BBB.org, and do a lookup of that way. So there's a couple of things you can do. Telephone the company. I don't know. Telephone the phone number. Some companies are, you know, frauds basically, and they're part of a fraud to rip off people. I mean, they're not legitimate companies. They're just like a shell. So it's possible. I don't know if that person, is working. What about the family member? Maybe can check, or I would ask the family member and find out. What does he know? Where does he go? How does he relate to this company?
Yeah. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and there's still time for your questions and comments about scams. For Consumer Reports Senior Editor Jeff Bliskell at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. One of the scams that you raised, that Consumer Reports raised in a recent issue, is what I guess has sort of become known as the grandparent scam. And this one really seems to have taken off the last couple of years. I'm hearing a lot about it. Maybe walk through kind of what happens in this scam and why it seems to have trapped a lot of folks.
Right. So you get a phone call, probably in the middle of the night, and it's from this may be your grandparent, you get a phone call from what is supposedly one of your grandchildren, and maybe he's been in an accident or been arrested or been mugged overseas somewhere, and he needs you to wire some money to him quickly to help him get him out of jail or to pay for a lawyer or whatever, or pay for a medical doctor or whatever. So, and of course, as one of your earlier callers mentioned, there's always the urgency, you know, I need help now. And so, if the grandparent says, well, let me check with your parents. No, don't call my parents. You know, I don't want them to know. So, it's kind of like that's designed to isolate you from checking out the facts. So basically, this is a scam. And, the idea is to get you or get the person on the phone to wire money to a location, probably overseas or maybe in Canada, whereby that person can collect the money and disappear basically. And so it's not really your grandson, apparent, probably, in most cases. So there was a couple up in Michigan who they got $3,000. They sent $3,000. Their grandson, quote unquote, was supposedly caught fishing in Canada without a license. So a $3,000 fine for that. So anyway, they were gullible enough to do that. So they wired that money. Then they got a call back, and they needed $30,000 now, and they sent it because the drama, and it escalated to the police found drugs and alcohol on the boat. So now, you know, oh, my gosh. So anyway, so those people got taken for $33,000 in this scam. So it can happen. Some people, you know, but basically hang up on those people. Ask for details about your last visit, you know, that your grandchild should recall and a stranger wouldn't. You know, jot down the caller's location and phone number. And then also, instead of calling Western Union or some, you know, some wire service, you know, call the grandchild's parents and or the people who know him to find out where he is. Is he really in Canada or is he really in Germany? You know, get the facts. So, you know, that's basically you got to do your reporting. Don't respond whenever, again, so when people are telling you it needs to be done urgently, you know, unless a person is in front of you bleeding or something, you don't need to be urgent.
And this actually raises a couple of other issues. One is that there's some recent research indicating that there may be some age-related changes in our brains. Scientists are finding that there's an area of the brain that helps us work out who can be trusted and who can't, and that area of the brain is a little less active in older men and women. And so maybe as we get older, we become more willing to trust or accept a story that we're told.
Yes, I think I've seen that research, and it jives with another scam, which is basically a common scam in retirement communities or states where there's a lot of senior citizens, like Florida, where those people, they have, you know, they're retired, so they probably have some money, you know, in investments or retirement savings, and they get invited to, you know, investment seminars, quote-unquote, which are basically nothing illegal about that, but they're basically designed to...
Well, tell you what, it sounds like you need to cough a little bit. Go ahead and do that. I want to remind our listeners, this is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. We have a few minutes left, so there's still some time for your questions and comments about scams. For Consumer Reports Senior Editor Jeff Bliskell, you can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Jeff, so you were talking about of these investment seminars.
So the investment seminars, nothing illegal about giving investment advice, except that when a study was done about them by the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, and they found that they often were given inappropriate products, so an annuities, for example, real estate investment trusts, reverse mortgages, things like that, which were inappropriate for the age group. So, you know, you don't want a long-term investment if the guy is 90 years old, right?
Right.
That's not the kind of investment you want to put him in. You want to put him in something liquid and safe. You know, so basically they found that these people, that older people or senior citizens are being ripped off by these things. And, of course, the come on is a free dinner, free golf, you know, special gifts, you know, win a prize. And it's all designed to get the money from the seniors, basically.
And the other idea or concept that as you're describing some of these scams that are sort of raised is this notion that when someone becomes a victim of a fraud, a scam, I think any of us, it's a natural tendency to not want to admit that we've been scammed. And so in many cases with what from a distance you might say is, oh, well, that's obviously a scam. Someone that's sort of bought into it. Once you buy into it, there might be even this tendency to, well, let's double down. You know, someone promises that they're going to, you know, give me money if I just, you know, if I need to wire some information or give them some information or wire some money, and it turns out not to be the case. Oh, but then they come back and they say, well, we need to do this other step, you know, so they ask for more money. And you sit there and say, well, why do you keep getting scammed by them? Because you haven't admitted the scam in the first place, maybe to yourself.
Right. You feel foolish and you don't want to, it's like getting a parking ticket, right? When, you know, you're also angry when you get the parking ticket, but then you kind of stop and say, well, I guess I did park in a no parking zone. You know, so people are reluctant to admit that they've been taken and that they're so gullible. So, yeah, so and I think often I've seen literature where it's not, you know, a lot of people don't report them to the authorities.
Let's go next to David in Tolono. Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. I wanted to tell your guests and audience about a fascinating scam that we did not fall for, thank goodness, but it was really interesting. So we had a lawnmower for sale, a garden tractor, $1,750. And, you know, you get some people, local people, and then I got a phone call. This phone call came through the teletype for the desk. So the person's supposed to be typing something, and then there's a phone service where the operator is telling you what they typed. And, you know, this seemed odd, but I guess deaf people have to mow their lawn. So they said, okay, well, we'll send you a cashier's check for the full amount. Oh, and then we want to add $500 to that. So we'll send you $500 more. Could you then please go to Western Union, you know, after you get the check, and take that $500 and, you know, wire it to this other place, and they'll come and pick up the mower. So I'm thinking, oh, cashier's check, that sounds like, you know, real cash. But then we got the cashier's check in the mail about 3 days later, so I still was quite surprised, and I noticed that it was coming from somewhere in Boston, and the instructions of the address of where to wire the money to was in Texas. And this really didn't start adding up. So, you know, I'm trying to ask the person, because there's a way to talk to them, but it's always through the TDD people, it's all types of the deaf people. And that's just more like, well, where do you live? Who, you know, who are you? Why, you know, is this going to Texas and the checks from Boston? And so we called the FBI, because clearly there was something illegitimate about this. And I went and talked to a banker, and the banker said, hey, just because it's a cashier's check doesn't mean it's actually cash. Sure, we would instantly put it into your bank account, but if it turns out that cashier's check doesn't clear, you're not going to get, we're going to deduct that money from your bank account.
Yep.
The FBI right. said, oh, it's too low of an amount for us to deal with. We started talking to the TTD operators, and they were so relieved that someone finally caught on to this. They were saying 95% of their calls are scams.
Hmm.
Right. This is a common scam on Craigslist when you put stuff up for sale on Craigslist or other classified ad websites. And you're right, the check is no good. It's junk. And we all assume it preys on your assumption that a cashier's check is good as cash. And so what happens is, and this is, I like this one too, because it's interesting, because it preys on our goodness. Because so you get a check. So in a lot of times the scam is they send you a check and they overpay you. And it's like, oh, well, instead of sending it back to me, I trust you. Just deposit it in your own account. Wow, somebody trusts me so much, right? Mm-hmm. And just wire me the money back. And so you go and do that, you know, to uphold the goodness of mankind, as you, if you will, and show how nice you are and how trusting you are. And now you've been scammed. And it's because the money the check bounces, and now you're out the money.
We have just a couple of minutes left. I was wondering if there were any specific scams that you think we should be worrying about, aware of, leading up to Christmas and New Year's, these next couple of weeks? Anything that tends to surface around this time of year?
I understand that that fraud kind of goes up, ticks up during the holidays because everybody's desperate for money, or some people are desperate for money and they, you know, they decide to steal it. Anything related to certainly giving, you know, this is the season of giving, so if somebody is out there claiming to, you know, to be helping somebody or calls you up, I would be suspicious of that, you know, related to the seasons or helping people and such. You know, you can if you want to do that, definitely do that, but go find the organization. So go find the United Way or your local church or synagogue and help that way, or food bank and whatever. So don't let them come to you. And So I would say that that may be probably the giving-related scams may be the biggest.
Any other general rules of thumb to protect yourself from all sorts of scams?
Well, you have to mention the final, the coup de grace, basically, which is the scam. Once you've been scammed, the bad guys share information. So you might ultimately get a call from a recovery room, which basically the bad guys sell sucker lists. So if you've been scammed once, then they say, aha, here's a good prospect. I'll sell you. Pay me for these names. And so you might get a call from someone saying, we know you've been conned, and we're going to help you recover your money, your losses. We figured out, you know, we're on the lead here.
Wow.
All you have to do is pay us a couple $100, you know, an upfront fee. And, of course, you do that, and of course, that's another scam. It's, you know, you never get your original money back, and you never get your fees back.
Happy holidays, everybody. Jeff Bliskell.
Merry Christmas.
And Jeff Bliskell is a senior editor for Consumer Reports. Jeff, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
And we welcome any additional thoughts that you may have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. On tomorrow's show, we will welcome your questions for Dr. Michael Novak from Carl's Audiology and Hearing Services. We'll discuss hearing health, everything from hearing problems like dizziness, tinnitus, related conditions, to what you can do to best protect your hearing for the long haul. That's on tomorrow's program. Then on Friday, we'll welcome your year-end tax questions for accountants John Breen and Marty Verdick. Today's show is produced by Travis Stanzel. Kyle Mabries, our technical director, he handled your calls today. I'm Craig Cohen.